I think it's you know, when you there's today sport became a business industry a bit too much in my opinion in certain sports, and it's very important to kind of keep kind of intact with the essence of why you started playing the sport. And I try to keep on reminding myself, because it seems like, you know, nowadays the industry is so big and you have too many temptations and endorsement deals and stuff that make your life, you know, materialistically better. And I think that too many athletes too early in their lives, they just kind of chase that, if you know what I mean. And they're probably, it's not even them deciding, but, you know, families, agents, and just the whole world revolves around their talent that can be, so to say, sold, you know, in this industry. And I think that's where, you know, maybe you lose a little bit of a contact with your development. And that's what I felt that a little bit in my own example, but also watching others, and I was, you know, mentoring also some tennis players from Serbia, and seeing what they've been through, and then I can see it, how it reflects in their life. And it's so I mean it would be really interesting to hear his story. I'm definitely looking forward to hear that, and please send him my best.
I will definitely, man. No, thank you. No, it's good, and I think it's so beautiful that you are mentoring other Serbian talents and tennis players, because I think that's what everyone needs. They need a guiding hand, they need someone who's been there.
We need to share, that's
absolutely
for sure. That's
for sure. And I think so much of the time we live in this scarcity mindset. Even with the deals, people say things like, oh, it's good for you right now, but it might not be later, so make the most of it. And then that intention is fueling people's, you know, greedy mentality. Like, oh, you've got 3 years.
Now is the time, you've got to use it. Otherwise, you know, I know, because I've been and still trying to learn how to manage this myself, because I have also lots of opportunities, and being number one of the world, and tennis is a global sport and everything, but, you know, I'm kind of going through this kind of centering process of understanding what I need to, you know, do in order to organize my life better, in order to focus on what is the most important, you know, aspect of my existence here, you know, the inner peace, you know, the spiritual growth, the understanding of self, and of course the family, the close ones. But, you know, for most of my career, it was all about tennis all the time, you know. So tennis, and then my ego plays with me so much. I mean, it plays with all of us, you know.
Absolutely.
But,
absolutely.
You know, it's I've been thinking firstly that ego is the enemy, but actually now I'm kind of more leaning towards the theory that that ego is it should be befriended, you know. It should be, you know, part of your process of thinking, of feeling, and in this way you're also disarming your ego in a way, right?
Yes.
Rather than kind of trying to reject it, and then you're creating this, and this is it's so much, you know, what we're actually going through out in the outside world as well, right?
So let me introduce you, and then I'll explain why I did it, because I think it'll make sense. Hey everyone, thank you so much for coming back for this very, very special episode. I'm genuinely so honored and grateful to introduce our next guest. Not only is he the number one tennis player in the world, he has 14 Grand Slam titles, including 4 Wimbledons, but on top of all of that, he's extremely spiritual, an incredible healer, transformer, and someone who's doing so much great work in the world. I've had the pleasure of getting to know him over Instagram and WhatsApp, and today I get to sit down with him for the first time, but he's definitely someone who's attracted me here to Monaco through his energy and through his incredibly humble and graceful spirit. So, Novak, it is an absolute pleasure being with you, my friend. And I feel your energy over WhatsApp and Instagram. I feel it in front of you right now. And I really believe that we've just been pulled together.
So, so good. I mean, thank you so much for coming to see me here. I'm really honored. And it's, as you said, you know, social media was the platform through which we established the first connection, but I feel like, you know, watching you and what you do and sharing your message, I felt connected with you instantly, and your message deeply resonates with me, with people that are close to me. And it's a dream come true to be with you here today.
No, you're the sweetest, man. And I genuinely feel that when you have a good, and anyone who's listening, I highly recommend this. If you have a good online connection with someone, take it offline as quick as you can.
Yes.
Like, turn it into face-to-face. And that's what I saw, that we were connecting so beautifully. I remember one of the first things you said to me was, higher forces are connecting us. Like, higher forces are between us getting connected. And when you said that to me, I just felt, I have to meet you. There's no need to keep this relationship online. There's no need to just have it here. If this is someone who truly believes there's a deeper connection here, let's get together. Let's see each other. So I'm so grateful that you opened up this opportunity for me to visit you.
Thank you very much. And I'm really grateful that and genuinely, you know, honored that you guys came all the way from LA. You know, it's a long trip. And I think we, you know, we all share a common kind of vision and compassion for you know, for the world. And I think we all interact, you know, with the world in a very similar ways, even though we, you know, I'm an athlete, but I don't like to categorize or label myself as an athlete, you know, as society likes. Mm-hmm. I think we expand much more than that. And social media and internet is great if you use it in the right way. So I feel like it's a great platform. It got us connected, and we're here today. And not a while ago, I've sent you a message on Instagram because I'm your fan. I follow, of course, I follow your message, and I follow your energy and everything that you've been spreading and sharing with people. So I'm just happy to get deep and talk about you know, things that I usually don't get asked on the tennis tournaments. So it's really exciting.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what I love about you, and that's what I'm excited for everyone who's listening and watching, is that you are an athlete, but what I was saying to you earlier is you are so much more, and you have so much more to give. You've worked so hard on the court. But what I love about you is that you're also an inner athlete. Like, you're doing this inner work, and you've really focused on growing yourself, healing yourself, working on yourself. So let's dive into all of that. Sure. Today. Make this the interview where you make this the interview where you get to talk about everything that's important to you. And that's why this podcast actually started. I was speaking at an event last year, and Tom Brady was speaking before me, and he was interviewed by a sports journalist. And the conference was actually about building meaningful lives. So I was asked to speak about that topic. Tom was speaking before. And the interviewer asked him a question, and Tom started speaking about his family. Mm. He started talking about being a father. Mm. He started talking about all these beautiful values and responsibilities, and how he's growing now that his sports career is coming to a, you know, a natural end, etc. And the sports journalist just said to him, they said, "Tom, leave all this soft stuff. Let's talk about the sports." And I felt so bad for him, because I just felt like he was really trying to open up his heart. And the sports journalist was almost just squashing all of that and saying, "Let's just talk about your rings. Like, let's talk about the medals." Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to build a platform where people like yourself and people from music, media, movies, film, everyone can actually come and talk about your deeper sides and your real heart. Mm-hmm. So I want you to feel really comfortable to be able to do that today.
I am very much, and yeah. You're definitely one of the very few people that in my life and that I've known, you know, thus far, and of course, that I'm following, that I can share this message with. And I truly mean that, because, and I don't mean that in a bad way for the society. I'm not judging. I don't like the judgment. I don't like the word hatred or anything like that. I respect everyone, I respect also this kind of moment in time that we as people are in.
Yes.
You know, and our society is where it is, with a reason, and we just have to go through that stage of development, I think, and evolution. And it took me time to really, I feel like, come to that understanding in a way, because I was also, for many years, through my character building process and spiritual development and kind of opening my mind to different dimensions and horizons of you know, self-awareness and self-care, I was just feeling a lot of times lonely, you know, mm-hmm. and I just felt like what I was doing was not understood, especially in my world. And not just understood, but it was not accepted, which was even worse, because then, you know, you're labeled as a kind of like a black sheep, you know, in the herd. And but I still wanted to play tennis and still stay in that sport, in that you know, field of life, which I have, and I'm not, you know, regretting. On contrary, I'm so blessed to do what I love. I've started playing tennis when I was 4 years old. My family did not have any tennis tradition, so it was literally a sign of a destiny. Three tennis courts in front of my parents' restaurant in a small mountain place in Serbia called Koponik. My father was sorry, but giving you a little background.
Yeah,
of my
do
family,
it. Yeah,
was a professional skier. He was a skiing instructor. That's how he met my mom on the skiing slope. And you know, it's a funny story. You know, she kind of like
tell us.
She, yeah. You know, she was skiing and then she fell, and then he was there and he's like, oh, you know, you need help. I think I can help you. And he probably organized the whole thing, you know, but you know, that's how they met. And you know, they you know, 6 months later they got married, and I was already, my mom was pregnant with me. And then a year later they opened a restaurant in the very mountain where they met, and that's the restaurant was the business that generated the you know, the budget for our family. So we spent a lot of time there because we lived 3 hours by car away in the capital city of Serbia, Belgrade, where I went to school. And my two younger brothers, their names are Marco and Giorgio. Their one is 4 years old, younger than me, and the other one is 8 years younger than me. And this is like, we talked about, you know, my children and the indigo children, and a kind of like a new wave of, you know, of energy and consciousness and awareness that we're receiving from above through children that already have, you know, what we don't have, you know, and that's what I see in my brother, you know, and he's been born with this capacity and ability to just multitask and deal with things so successfully and still be happy, and it's quite amazing. So, you know, going back to my story is, you know, I've felt that in my world of tennis, I just, when you're a professional athlete, you know, it's all about winning or losing, right? I don't see losing or failure as such. I see it as another great lesson that awaits for me to learn from.
Did you always have that, even when you were young?
No. No, I just, as I said, I went through my evolution, and I was fortunate, really, that when I started playing tennis, I ran into and came across some really, really knowledgeable people about tennis and about life. In particular, one woman, and her name is Jelena Gencic. She's not with us anymore. She passed away in 2012. She was my tennis mother. And so my parents, you know, invested a lot of energy and efforts. And in those times during the 90s when I was growing up, we had two wars. We had, unfortunately, war that broke down the whole Yugoslavian region, because it was a big Yugoslavian country, very strong, made of, you know, six different states. I mean, countries that are right now independent. I'm coming from one of them, which is Serbia. And then during 90s, from like 91, 92, all the way till 2000, we had embargo. So people waiting in line for bread and milk and like absolutely most, you know, necessary things. And then 99, we had in Serbia, we had bombings for 2.5 months, every single day and night. I was there, my family was there every single day. We woke up every night for 2.5 months because of the alarm and because of the planes flying over us. And it was devastating. It was frightening. It was worst thing that definitely we, you know, we ever experienced, you know, seeing planes over your head and just dropping bombs and, you know, hospitals and everything. It was just terrible, terrible. Many innocent people died. Thankfully, I didn't lose personally anyone that is very close to me. But I know people that lost, you know, their loved ones, and that's a scar that stays with you forever. So this memory stays and will stay with me forever. But at the beginning, I felt like probably most of the people in my country, I felt I want revenge. You know, I felt like, you know, who are these guys to bomb innocent people? What the hell is going on? I was 12 years old, and I remember I was there day and night, and I celebrated my 12th birthday during the day because we didn't go to schools, obviously. I was just hiding in shelters and everything. And then we just, after a week or two hiding in shelters, we just said, okay, we're just gonna, you know, go about our life, and that's it. You know, we're not gonna care what happens. If, you know, if we're hit, we're hit. You know, what we can do. I mean, and so I remember on my 12th birthday, kids were singing, my friends at the tennis club, because we spent a lot of times playing tennis. So we didn't go to school, so for us it was great. and then we they were singing the happy birthday song, and there was a plane flying, and I have this image of my plane and just kind of dropping bombs everywhere, and it was it's terrible. But at the same time, I felt like as I was kind of growing, you know, inside out as well, I felt, and I think my parents helped me a lot with that, is that they, you know, we can't judge the whole nation or everyone for the actions of certain individuals or certain groups or institutions or whatever that decided to bomb our country and just kill innocent people. We can't, you know, judge everyone for that, you know? And that's when I kind of like shifted, and I right, you know, this moment, absolutely forgiven everyone and everything that have done that. But you cannot forget that. Mm-hmm. You know, you cannot forget that. It stays, as I said, as a scar. But it has, on a brighter side, brought a lot of value to my life and a lot of appreciation for the value. Mm. I felt like this experience, I'm so grateful for this experience. I truly am, because it has helped me to shape me into the person that I am today. The player, tennis player that I am, it has made me hungrier for the success in tennis, made me hungrier to work, train, build myself so I can show to the world that, you know, a kid from, you know, war-torn country can actually be the best in a sport that is very global. And so that's what happened. But all of these experiences have definitely been there for a reason, and I don't regret anything. I don't pity anything. I just feel like, okay, you know, that's my karma. You know, that's something that I had to go through, and I had to live that. And if we manage to get through that, as not just as a family, but as people, as a nation, you know, there's not much that can break you down. So, and historically, you know, Serbian people and people in the region have had a lot of, you know, hard wars and hardships, and they've been through that. So it was really nice to see the unity with people. And I remember I was actually talking the other day with my brother and my wife about still reflecting on that period, and what was the strongest image that stayed with us from this bombings of 2.5 months in 99. And one of them for me was obviously the one that I explained to you with the birthday and shelters. But there was one where I remember thousands of people gathering on the bridge, one of the most important bridges in our city, with shirts that have targets there, and everyone painted their heads with like in a shape of a target, and singing songs, and, you know, kind of just enjoying having fun, and in a way showing to the world and to whoever is, you know, kind of dropping bombs, that we are the target. So we are protecting this bridge. We are protecting this city. You know, if you want to crash it, you have to go through us. And it was, I think more than that, it was just that power of unity. You know, that energy and that strength that they just showed, the resilience, and that was beautiful. You know, in those moments of hardship.
That's incredible, man. Mm. That's such a, I've heard you tell that story.
I'm sidetracked from your question.
No, and I'm glad. I'm glad you did, because I've heard that story before. I'm glad that everyone who hasn't heard that story before has an opportunity now. And the reason why it's so beautiful is because that's probably, like, most of the planet does not experience that. Mm. That's pretty extreme.
Yes.
Right? And so for someone like you to come from that extreme, and especially what you said, your initial response was revenge, for you to be able to transform that revenge into resilience, that's incredible. Mm. Because it would have been so much easier to just have that pain and have that unforgiveness. And so it's...
There was a great story that I've read. I'm sure it's quite popular on the social media. Everyone is sharing it. It was about the snake and the saw.
Okay.
I don't know if you came across
Tell
it.
Tell me.
And it's, you know, the snake, it's a kind, it's a true story, actually. The snake came into the, you know, carpenter's shop, and as it was kind of going, and it got caught by the saw, and the saw kind of cut it, and the snake didn't realize what was happening, so it went to bite the saw, and it hurt itself even more. So the snake didn't know what was happening. So it started going around the saw in order to, you know, suffocate it, thinking that saw is attacking it. So it was, you know, protecting itself, and finally snake died. And this kind of translates into life. And it's so many times that we get angry or upset, you know, with some people, thinking that we want to hurt them because we feel hurt, but it finally we're hurting ourselves. And it was such a deep message that I kind of like resonated with, really. And I think that kind of sums up my evolution in a way, and my growth mentally, of how, you know, I should deal with these particular circumstances and events that have been quite significant in my life. And, you know, the wars and those times of, you know, hardships were definitely one of the most significant times of my life and my career, where I experienced what it feels like to literally have $10 in at home in the apartment with you know, for my father and my mother with three children to feed, and having to wait in the line to get a piece of bread for hours, and not being able to travel around the world to play tennis. And tennis is an expensive sport.
Absolutely.
You know, you need money to pay for the racket, for the tennis balls, for the coach, for the court. So all of these things, you know, and I think in the end of the day, as I said, it brings light and value to my life, because, you know, I think going through all of that has made me stronger, but at the same time made me more grateful. Because I understand the both extremes, so to say. Because yes. Today I really I enjoy so much of success in this, you know, society and the sport, and I can afford many things, and I'm really, really grateful for that and blessed. But I've been on the opposite side, yeah. So I think that storyline is really something that enriches me.
Absolutely, man. Mm. And your life story is such a beautiful message to the world. It's a great message to the world. Like, it's incredible. And I'm glad that I see, when, from the way I view it, you live it like a message too. It's not about you. That's what I feel when I'm with you, that it's not about you. It's not like I did this. Mm. It's actually a story and a message to the world that, you know, any child, any person who is in such abject conditions can actually transform their lives. So thank
Absolutely.
You for being there.
No, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And I just feel like, you know, the message I can share from my experience, and I don't want ever for people to feel that I'm preaching or anything like that. I just feel like my experience has helped me to reach, you know, certain success, if you want to call it, you know, in both professional and private way, is that there is always time for everything. And you know, I'm learning myself even today how to be patient, how to you know, coordinate certain things in my life, how to create space for the biggest quality time that I can have with my priorities, which are my family, which is my growth. And it's a constant juggle. And I truly believe in balance, but I don't believe that we can ever reach a stage and our point where we can say, I'm in balance.
I agree.
You can be in balance, but the next moment you're not in balance because that's life and everything is moving and it's happening. So so that's why I feel like, and then through tennis, I've learned my, you know, biggest and hardest lessons in life, and I've experienced those emotions. And for me, you know, tennis court is still a field, you know, where I have a chance to grow, really. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not on the tennis court, I find it much easier to accomplish certain things that I want to on a daily basis. But then tennis court I use as exactly that platform that challenges me and challenges my ego. So I still have, for example, outbursts on the court. I break a racket, I scream, I curse. I know you don't curse at all. And I admire that. Amazing that you took that vow. You got to teach me how to do that. And so when that happens, instantly I feel like, oh my God, why? What did I do? You know, and I have two children. I have, you know, many children around the world are watching and you know, seeing what you're doing and imitating you in a way. So you're sending that kind of message. So I try always to have that in the back of my mind and you know, subconsciously, like, okay, you know, try to do, you know, what you do best, but do it with dignity, do it with style, do it, you know, with always having, you know, that kind of inner voice telling you, you know, there's, you know, thousands, you know, of children around the world watching you play right now and absorbing like a sponge every move, everything you say, everything you do. But it's, I still do it. I still go through these outbursts. And I've felt disappointed with myself for a while.
Wow.
Because of that. I really felt like I was betraying myself. I was not managing to do what I intended to do. And then I learned about surrender, and then I learned about there is a time for everything in life, and there is a reason why we have to take every step of the way in order to reach the top, of in whatever way you feel that top is for you, and then I understood that, you know, I have to accept, I have to embrace, I have to channel it, and understand that, you know, I still have to work, and I have to work all the way to the last day that I breathe, and I'm happy with that. I really feel like I managed to take that positive leap in that direction.
You've touched on it a few times then. I want to dive into it deeply. You mentioned success, reaching the top. The world sees your success. The world sees your achievements. But in Novak Djokovic's eyes, in your own eyes, what's been your greatest success, your greatest achievement so far, in your perspective?
It's a good question. My greatest achievement is my open mind. I feel that with an open mindedness type of, you know, perspective and approach to life, you help all the natural processes in yourself to flourish and to excel, and you're embracing the natural flow of life where you have to evolve and you have to develop and you have to learn. And if I have to define it that kind of shortly, I would say it's just open mind, because I feel the ignorance and the closed-mindedness and certain convictions that people have are so strong that, you know, you go throughout your whole lifetime without really allowing, you know, yourself to open up to the world and learn about all these different cultures and things that can enrich your life and make you feel more fulfilled and live a more fulfilled life, be more joyful, have that inner peace and emotional balance and stability that we all strive to. And I just feel with an open mind, you're just helping yourself and you're able to receive, kind of filter and then, you know, give at the same time, because, you know, the Taurus field, everything has to flow. Yeah. So that's how it flows. But if you don't have an open mind, then obviously everything closes up, whether it's health, whether it's you know, profession, whatever it is in your life, it just kind of feels, and I was there. I was there. I don't want people to think that I know it all or whatever. I just feel, you know, also that I'm sharing the experiences from my process because I was there, as I said, I felt, you know, resentment. I felt, you know, feeling of revenge. I felt hatred. I felt all of that. We all, you know, go through that. We're all human beings. We, you know, kind of, you know, experience those kind of emotions. But I feel with training and repetition and discipline that obviously sport has taught me so well, you can really reach anything that you truly want and desire in your life.
And where did that open-mindedness start? Like, where did you start to notice that the closed mind was limiting you and the open mind was expanding you?
I think very early, to be honest, ever since I kind of wished to play tennis
right.
when I was 4 or 5 years old, and tennis was never a sport in our family, I think, I kind of helped also my parents to expand, you know, outside of their, in a way, comfort zone and go into the sport or field of life that is completely unknown to them in a way. Mm. And I think that, I started playing tennis when I was 4 and a half, I think, 5 years old. And before that, I was skiing a lot. And I remember even before I started to run, I was already with my dad, you know, skiing. He was carrying me and going down the slopes. And so the first sport for me was skiing.
Right.
And until I was, I think, 9 years old, I didn't really know whether I want to ski or play tennis. Mm. I was football, soccer a little bit there, but it was mostly about skiing or tennis. And unfortunately, I mean, we've been through all this, and my father asked me, I remember that day when he sat me down with my mom, and he said, I am ready to support anything that you desire to do in your life, and I'm here for you. You have to tell me if it's sport, okay, and what sport. And and I said, okay, give me one thing I needed to, you know. And
big decision.
Yeah, I mean, and then
you could have been the best
player. I was thinking, and then I said, like, it didn't take me a long time. I said maybe just a little time to think. But then after half an hour, I went to him and I said, it's tennis, right? And he said, okay, tennis it is. And then I think us kind of getting into this uncomfortable, unknown zone or area or field of life has allowed us to kind of expand, all of us. And also having certain mentors and people that have greatly positively affected me on many levels. I've mentioned my tennis mother, as I like mm-hmm. to call her. I've met her when I was, I think, 5, 6 years old, and then I started training with her tennis camp, summer tennis camp that was coming from Belgrade, from capital city, to Koponik, this place in the mountains. And then when I was, I think, 6, 7, I also started having some private lessons with her in Belgrade while I was, you know, going to school, and she was happy to play with me because she felt like I was very talented. Mm-hmm. And then she told my parents, she said, I really feel like you should try to give your best to support this child to play tennis because I've never seen a bigger talent from Monica Seles, who was, you know, obviously the best tennis player in the world and one of the best female tennis players of all times. And she was her coach as well. And because Monica was born in Serbia and then she went to live in States where she is today. And and of course, my parents were like, well, if such a experienced and knowledgeable person about the tennis says that, then, you know, we should try to support our child. So that's what happened. And I remember I was watching, you know, tennis practices and sessions on the fence. I was climbing. I was really, really in love with the sport. I was very passionate about it. And she taught me about holistic approach to life, I think.
Wow.
Already back then when I was 7, 8, she really taught me how to, you know, think about the grades in the school, the music that I listen to, the mindfulness that I have, the observation, the focus, the kindness, the relationship with people. She was working in a team with my parents, and my parents, you know, I'm really grateful for my parents because they recognized the role of a mentor very early
on.
So they kind of teamed up with her, and then, you know, I was learning a lot from my parents, obviously, and continue to learn, and from my tennis mother. So that has helped me to, I feel like, be open-minded and understand. But I obviously went through my phases and, you know, through the process of learning and those dealing with those emotions. Although I felt when I started traveling by myself, because I was traveling with my father until I was, I think, 16, and then I was 17, I started having my coach, and I, you know, I didn't get too deep in the conversations with my dad and with my mom, and I felt there are some subjects and that, you know, I want to talk about, and in, especially in, you know, puberty and teenage years, you know, you're experiencing so many changes. And I was so much in tennis that I didn't really have time for other maybe school activities that my fellow friends and, you know, students were going through, because I was so much in tennis. And then I started sharing so much with my coach, my team, that I remember my dad was like, why don't you share that with me? And I was like, because I don't feel that I've never shared that those particular subjects and types of conversations with you. I don't feel we can resonate on that level. And we tried, but it never worked out. So, but he was understanding, and that I also have to have, you know, people that are close to me and then influence me on different levels, and that's what I feel like it helped me a lot to develop.
Wow. And one of the things I noticed about you is also, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, I feel like it's tough to get to the top, but it seems to be even tougher to get to the top, have a slump or have a moment of challenge, and then try and get back, because you've experienced something. And it's like, I know that you've even credited your wife with her dedication to self-care and your work and what she's trained you or shared with you in journaling. Tell us a bit about the process that you've taken to be at the top, have challenges, and then still come back. Because everyone's been quoting, obviously, you having the impossible comeback. But you made it possible. What was happening mentally, spiritually for you? Not just physically, but what was happening mentally and spiritually for you?
Well, first of all, to reflect on the impossible word. In the word, you have I am possible, right?
Absolutely.
So I truly don't believe in something is impossible. I really believe really everything is possible, as we talked about it earlier. My wife has been my girlfriend for a long time, ever since I was 18. She was 19. That's when we started dating, and she used to play tennis, and that's how we met, and we've known each other 4 or 5 years before we started dating, and, you know, through tennis, and then she went to study in Italy, in Milan, and I came at more or less the same time here in Monaco, to follow my coach at the time, and I started using Monaco as a base, and she came over. Milan is close to Monaco, so she came over, and that's how it all started. And when she finished studies, she was obviously, you know, thinking she had a lot of opportunities for her own career, but she sacrificed that in order to live my career, live my dream, in order to save the relationship in a way. So I'm very grateful for her and what she has, you know, done for our relationship and for me. And I continue to learn from her so much. She introduced me to yoga, actually.
Wow.
back in the days when she was studying, she is a huge reader. She likes to read everything and anything, and she, you know, likes to write as well. And she was big on journaling all the time. And I remember when I was quite young, from my tennis mother and from my parents, I learned how to kind of write and have specific things that I want to share on the paper. I did it, you know, kind of like what I'm grateful for and things like that, which was nice. But then I lost that. I didn't do it for many years. And then she reminded me of that. So I started doing it again. And it felt great, because I felt like I could release a lot of things that were tensing me up.
Through journaling.
Through journaling, writing. Exactly.
Right, right, right.
but also through yoga. You know, she learned about it. Because she was so stressed during her, you know, studies. She spent a whole day obviously studying with books, and you know, student life isn't easy. So she was looking into ways how she can relax herself, get more energy, and you know, she was not drinking coffee or any of these things. So she came into yoga and she was sharing it with me. So I started doing it with her. You know, the whole the breathing, the pranayama, the sun salutations and everything. And that's ever since then we've been doing obviously some form of yoga, you know, try on a daily basis. You know, she's been a very significant integral part of my life and my evolution. And what I'm really grateful for is that not only that we, you know, truly love each other and we are very transparent and honest, but also that we have help from the universe to actually be in a very similar state of consciousness in certain phases of our lives, so we can help each other learn better and grow faster in certain areas that we choose that are, you know, part of those particular periods. So I think she would agree that when we became parents 4 years ago, that has completely shifted our world, you know, upside down. Up to that moment, we were also spiritual, but you know, still quite basic comparing to what has happened after that. And we truly believe that our kids are our masters and our teachers, and then they come to this life to bring lessons for us and bring help for us to understand a lot of things about ourselves on a deeper levels and what we have to work on, which is quite contrary to what, you know, in a way, society thinks, we are teaching them, which we are, of course. But, you know, actually, I've been talking with her a lot about that. And now we have a baby girl that is 1 year old. And she, I was mentioning, she's a healer. She really is. And she brings that kind of energy to this world. And she has, skyrocketed our attention for the moments, for, you know, the consciousness, the awareness about everything. I mean, even more. And we're like, oh my God, there's another level. So we help each other grow. And I think I'm really grateful that I can share with her literally everything and anything that I'm interested in, that I'm going through. And, you know, she has been always the shoulder to lean on, and she has always been there. And tough moments for me in my career when I was, you know, going through an injury recently, and had to take 6 months break from the tennis. And then when I came back, I was like questioning whether I should keep on playing on that level or not. And I was just going through hard work inside. And then she was there, and she helped me to overcome all of that. Of course, alongside with help of some life spiritual teachers that I have that I can
speak about a little bit.
There are two guys in particular, Jose Pepe Imaz and Jarko Ilić. Jose Pepe is from Spain, and Jarko is from Serbia. And I consider them really as my spiritual and life teachers, my masters, that I've learned a lot from. And back in, I think, 2010 or 11, I've met Jarko, so about 7-8 years ago, and I met him through my wife, actually, because my wife had a friend that knew him, and that's how we got into it. He's a Reiki healer, but he's much more than that, and you know, he helped a lot, both my wife and I, to again open our mind even more, to understand how we can have internal conversations with ourselves. Because I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to verbalize my emotions. And that's where my wife was ahead of me. And that's where we struggled in our relationship, because she was trying to dig things out from me and make me share more. But I wasn't able to do that because I didn't know how. She's like, speak to me. What do you feel? I'm like, I don't know, I feel something, I just don't. And so I think Jacques was very helpful in that.
Sounds like everyone needs that.
Everyone, yeah. I mean, everyone needs that, of course. But I think, you know, there's this great saying, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will come, right?
Yeah.
So I felt that the first initial step I needed to do, I needed to decide in my mind and internally that, okay, this is exactly what I need for my heart, for my soul, for my growth. This is the priority. I have to learn how to manage myself, my emotions, how to, not just to be a better tennis player, but to be a better human being. And so then the teacher appeared, obviously. And then after that, obviously, I start to expand my awareness and you know, observation of the world. And then I run into Pepe, who is very close person and also a spiritual life teacher to my brother, Marco. Mm. And they live in the same place. Actually, Marco, my brother, went to live in Spain because of Pepe.
Wow.
And Pepe's whole philosophy of life is love and peace. Mm-hmm. And he brought that kind of energy into our lives, the perception of love and peace, what it really means. And at the beginning, I was actually not really supportive, I must say, of my brother, because he started doing that before me. He started going through this whole process of learning with Pepe. And he moved to Spain so he can be closer to him, because he felt, you know, deep inside that that's something that is very important that he has to address. And I didn't get it at that time. I thought, well, you know, you have to, you know, because he was playing professional tennis. I was like, you can't really, you know, just love and peace, you know, you have to kind of like go back and train and yeah. this, have this Work mindset. Hard. If you're love and peace on the court, the other guy will beat you. And this is what it comes down to, you know, in sports. And he was like, listen, I understand, but I trust me, I have to go through this. And I just feel that this is my growth. I didn't understand it at the time. Right. But I was attracted to Pepe because I felt that his energy was amazing, and you can never get upset with him. You know, you speak to him, he's like you. You know, he always smiles and everything. You know, even when we had tough conversations, he always smiles and sends, because he always prays inside and sends you love.
Yeah.
And for that, he had to work and still continues to work, I mean, immensely. Mm. And I didn't understand what he kept on emphasizing: inner work, inner growth, inner work, inner growth. Universal love. I didn't really get it, you know. Mm. And then obviously this whole energy attracted my wife and I, and we connected with Pepe and with my brother and on different levels, and today, you know, obviously we understand, you know, what he truly means, because we embraced that work.
Yes.
And we have to do it daily.
Yes.
And I just wanted to shortly reflect on that inner work. Okay. For the purpose or goal. My goal for the inner work up to not a while ago was tennis.
Wow.
And the feeling inside, you can call it ego, whatever, has drawn me to that sensation of I need to do this because that will help me play better tennis.
Mm.
But it didn't resonate something. I was living a successful life but not fulfilled.
Yes.
Life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And there was something wrong with that. I just felt the ounces of that truth and the essence and what it really means to do that on a daily basis for yourself and your growth as a human being and not just as a tennis player or a doctor or whatever. But it was weaker comparing to the other side, which was, yeah. Since I was 7, I dreamed of being number one of the world. That's my ambition. That's my lifetime goal. I have to fulfill it. When I fulfilled it in 2011, I kept on going. I want to be more Grand Slam. I have more Grand Slam trophies. I want to be number one for as long as I can. It just kept going. And I believe that from my experience, you need goals and objectives, you know, and but you need to balance that with, you know, what is truly the most important work, which is the inner work.
Yes.
And I didn't get it up to not a while ago, to be honest. And that's when I start to get it, and that's when I start to understand the message from Pepe.
Yeah.
He was, whatever you do it with excitement, with joy, with passion. But at the same time, never forget about what you have to do before, during, and after that, which is a much, much bigger work and longer work. And now I do truly understand that.
Yeah. Give us an, so for anyone who's listening and they're like, Novak, I'm like you, I don't get it yet.
Yeah.
You know, because so many people today, I feel like spirituality, energy, all of these words are flying around the internet. People are talking about it, but there's so many people that don't get it. Explain to us in your own way, in the way you see it, what is inner work and what inner work you do, what you were saying that before, that during, that after, that has helped you, not just in tennis, but
in fulfillment. Well, you've talked so and reflected so wonderfully on this in so many of your videos about the habits, about the addictions that we have. The whole day passes by, and we don't even remember a single moment in the day because we've just been distracted the whole time. Mm. So, you know, if we are learned and trained to be distracted, that's how, you know, our life is going to unfold. Mm. We are going to be distracted. But if we train ourselves to be present and more aware, then obviously we're shifting the attention of the subconscious and all the internal, external energies and nature and everything into that, you know, in a simplified way, work on the habits, right? I mean, I have, you know, still some habits that need working on. You know, and you know, it, for example, the phone, right?
Yeah.
That is so addictive, and you get into Instagram that I, by the way, love. I love Instagram. It's great, fantastic. It's how we connected.
It's how we connected, yeah, absolutely.
But if you let it become your master, then that's how it's going to be, and you're going to be distracted. You're going to feel lack of energy.
Absolutely.
You're going to feel lack of inner peace. You're going to feel upset, you know, you're going to have a short breath, you know, all these different things. And that reflects on relationships, that reflects on, you know, your performance at your work or whatever you're doing. And for me, I try to think inside, okay, what am I doing right on the tennis court? How can I translate that and off the tennis court?
Interesting.
And the on tennis court, what I'm doing right is complete 100% focus and presence of mind and body and everything, discipline, working towards objective, organized, preparing myself. This is a big thing. I feel, you know, if you fail to prepare, you prepare yourself to fail, right?
Absolutely.
So preparation is a huge thing. I mean, at least in my world for tennis, it has helped me a lot, because I don't want to put a number on it, but let's say 80% to 90% of the match that you want, for example, or any success that you have.
Before you stepped on the court.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. How you do your homework. For, you know, in my instance, you know, obviously working on all my strengths and weaknesses, preparing myself physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually for the match that is coming up. I have the whole short-term and long-term plan. How can I get from here to there in a shortest time? Those type of things. And then, you know, obviously doing your homework on the guy, on the opponent that you're playing against, where you're going to play, the stadium, the crowd, the weather. You know, it's really whole homework that you have to do in order before you get in. And then you win a tennis match. And then it's not only about the tennis match, it's 80-90% of the work that you do prior to that. So that's why I believe, you know, preparation is a big, big thing. Working on the habits, you know, the science says that you need 2 or 3 days that you can, you know, shift, you know, from bad habit to a healthy habit. So we need persistency, we need discipline, you know, we need repetition. And Bruce Lipton, that I also like to listen to a lot, he's talking about subconscious, right? And how subconscious is controlling probably 90-95% of our everyday life. So if we can feed our subconscious with the information that is going to allow us to excel and to live the life that we want to, then that's what's going to happen, because your subconscious doesn't know what's good for you or bad for you. It just knows what you tell it.
Yes.
And the seeds that you plant. So he was talking about, you know, there are two ways to kind of hack your subconscious, which is hypnosis, which happens from, you know, up until, you know, you're 7 years old. and then repetition. So that's why, I mean, my wife and I are very passionate for the preschool education and early childhood development until you're 6 or 7 years old. That's when it's most vast brain growth, and that's where, you know, the fundamentals and the foundation of your life is set. And that's where, you know, Bruce was talking about it really beautifully, and it made sense. And then after you're seven, it's repetition. Mm. It's discipline. Okay, I'm switching off all my phones after a certain hour. I'm, you know, doing my praying work because I believe in the invisible world. Science proves, quantum science talks about it, where the most distant points are actually one in a split second. And we all have proven that. Mm. And so you just need to really believe it in order to achieve it. Yeah. And, you know, where your attention, you know, where your attention goes, the energy flows. Mm-hmm. And I think it all starts with open mind, and you have to, I think, with a question. It's always so great to ask yourself questions. Who am I? Why I'm here, what I want to do, what I want to become, what I, you know, just all these questions, put on the paper, write it down, go through, you know, in your mind through that, whatever your method is, but you just have to address it. If you don't address it, you're going to go about the same things that you went about, and then you're going to get the same outcome that you don't desire. So I feel like that kind of awareness about that just helps, you know, absolutely, helps man. Learn. And, you know, I'm learning from you so much on a daily basis as well, because, you know, I obviously follow your work, and there are so many great messages out there. And I feel like this is the time where we can expand our consciousness and get closer to who we are. Because, you know, the two most important and oldest probably questions on this planet ever since the existence of humans is, you know, who we are and why we are here.
Absolutely.
So I think also the truth seeking element and part is also quite important in that. I mean, I consider myself a truth seeker. I like to, you know, try to dig even deeper and deeper and deeper and understand who we are. You know, why are we here? Is this a planet? Is this a realm? What is it? Mm. You know, is this a matrix? Is it not? You know, I think it's important to ask these questions and do your research and dig deep into that, because I think it all comes down to, you know, whether you are your own master or not. Mm. So I think if you are your own master, then it allows you to take actions the way you want them, rather than, you know, I love the Jim Quick that I also like very much. And he talks about the thermostat and thermometer. So don't be the thermostat, but be the thermometer. Set the temperature of the room, and you set it up the way you wanted it. And thermostat, if you set it, then it's reactive. Have to adjust. So it's reactive. And I think it's such a great wisdom.
Yeah, great advice, man. I loved what you were saying earlier. That's great advice, and I hope everyone's listening is taking notes. But that what you said earlier, I loved. You said that for a long time you believed ego is the enemy.
Yes.
And then now you've started to understand that actually the ego has to be befriended.
Yes.
And I thought I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. Sometimes I believe the ego is like a perfect mirror to yourself, in the self that you don't want. But at least it starts teaching you. The ego can teach you so much if you're aware of it. So I want to hear your perception on how you've been switching between ego as the enemy to actually befriending the ego.
Well, this
because you've got every reason to have a big ego. Yeah. Like, you've got every reason, yes. And you're not. You're a very humble person, but you've got every reason.
And I do have it. And I do have it. And this is the point. I didn't understand it at the time, and we talked about it a little bit. And as you reflected, I do have a big ego, but I have to embrace it and learn how to befriend it and deal with it in a ways that. I'm going to work and team up with my ego rather than I'm going to be an enemy of my ego, because then, again, I'm reacting. Then ego can, you know, persuade you and do different things and mask, you know, certain things. It's so smart and witty. And then you have to react. And then you have to just kind of like try to handle and juggle with so many things instead of, hey, let's team up. You're inside of me. I'm you, you're me, okay, let's figure this out. How can we work together? And you kind of have to, you know, please it. And at the same time, you have to control it. Mm-hmm. And I, even though I don't really like the word control, I still feel like, you know, if you create your controlled environment, it's going to be better off for you in your life.
Yeah. I've got, so what I finish off with every interview is called my final five. So the fast five. So these are fast five questions that you have to answer. So the first question I was going to answer is, what's the first thing that you do every morning?
First thing that I do every morning is prayer.
Beautiful. Second question, what do you pray for?
First, I express my gratitude for my body, for myself, for the opportunity to continue my evolution as a multidimensional being in this realm. I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for being able to have my senses and to have big bed and to have a most beautiful sunrise every morning.
It's amazing. Third, how do you make sure that your energy is where you want it to be, spiritually, internally?
Continuing to work on the things that we talked about. So aside of the physical work and tennis and duties as a father and a husband, I need to get in daily something in my self-care work, whether it's only a meditation or it's a two-minute breathing, prayer, whatever it is. Sometimes it's only that because you don't have time, but you know, it's important to just kind of, you know, keep doing it and be disciplined with it.
What's the best advice you've ever received?
Be open-minded.
I love that theme. That's the theme of this.
Be open. It's like
a theme for sure.
It's when you're open-minded, then you're ready to receive everything that we're surrounded with. And it's such a beautiful world and we're so blessed that we live in this world and that we go through the process of evolution. And I think when you come close to the realization of, you know, who you are, I think, and you continue to seek for that truth, it brings you closer to the source from where you arrived and just makes you so present and makes you so calm and it makes you so joyful and grateful for yourself, for people around you, for everything that you have, that you do, that surrounds you, that fulfills you. And I feel that that's the essence of our life.
Amazing. And the fifth and final question is, if your racket was a magic wand and you could get the whole world to understand one thing, what would you want everyone to understand?
That our consciousness expands infinitely.
Beautiful. Straight to the point. What do you mean by that? What do you want them to understand? Now I'm going to give you the opportunity.
Oh my gosh, we don't have enough time. that our consciousness expands infinitely means, well, at least in my own perception, is that we are more than we think or feel with our five senses that we really are. And when I came to this realization, it just opened the door to a whole different universe and dimension to me. And I feel that my evolution and my growth in every aspect of who I am and my every body has just quadrupled for light years ahead. I feel calm at the same time, but so excited for everything that life has to offer that I can learn.
Thank you, Novak. We so have to do a part two. Please, dive into all please, of that. Guys, we're going to have to make it happen. Yeah. But thank you so much, man. I'm so grateful.
My friend.
Thank you for your time and energy. I know you've got so many things on.
I love you guys.
To meet your amazing wife.
I love you
thank
guys.
Thank you so much, man.
Infinite love to
everyone. So grateful.